Welcome to Watch What Crappens, a podcast for all that crap we just love to talk about on Yo Bros. I'm Ronnie, and that's Ben over there. Hi, Ben.
Hey, Ronnie. What's up?
If you are on Crappens On Demand, then you're getting a very special Memorial Day episode, and you already know who we're with. We are with Dame Brian Moylan. Hello, Brian.
Hello. How's it going, guys?
Author What's up, of Brian?
The Housewives, the real story behind The Real Housewives, in which Brian Moylan calls me a liar, probably multiple times.
I did not call you a liar even once, I don't think.
Lisa Vanderpump. Apparently, Lisa Vanderpump.
I probably call Lisa Vanderpump a liar multiple times. Apparently, some fans have told me that on the audiobook I mispronounced your last names, and if I did that, I apologize, but I don't think I did.
Listen, I'm Lebanese. I'm used to my name being mispronounced, okay? I've been called Rhonda Kazam most of my life.
Yeah, my last name's always messed up, so don't even worry about it. It's really like, okay, it's just, you know, it's just an honor to be part of this book. It's an honor to be mentioned. I'm so excited. I just got my copy yesterday, so I haven't had a chance to dive into it yet. But we're so excited. We're so proud of you. First of all, for those who don't know Brian is just a wonderful, amazing writer who writes for Vulture, amongst other places. You write actually for several different outlets, and you've just written this book, The Housewives, The Real Story Behind The Real Housewives, by Brian Moylan himself.
Yay!
What is this? Tell us about what this book is. It's kind of funny. This is like, sounds so infomercially, but like, we're really excited to talk about all this stuff.
So it's basically like the history of Housewives and how it got started, and like the history of Bravo and the history of reality television and soap operas and how that created Housewives. So like how it all got made, and then how it does get made, like all the behind the scenes, all the different roles, how the editing process works, casting, you know, who pays for stuff, how everybody makes money, blah, blah, blah. And then I talk about like the fan cultures and people like ourselves who have glommed onto this for our livelihoods, and the fan cultures that surround it, and why we watch it, and what it says about us that we are so obsessed with the Housewives. So it's kind of like a 360 view of the Real Housewives phenomenon.
Yeah, it is. And it's cool to see who you got to talk to, because the last time we actually saw you in person was in New York at the Regency. And
yes.
You were talking about how you were writing this book. What kind of, I don't know how much we can go into here in a public forum, so I'll just let you go as far as you want. But what kind of stumbling blocks with Bravo did you get on this book? Because
so I always
not
had a
say
good
unauthorized. I was expecting a big unauthorized. I was expecting that.
I mean, essentially, yes. But so when I saw you at the Regency, I was actually having drinks with somebody who then worked in Bravo PR to say, hey, I'm working on this book, because I always had a good relationship. So I wanted to let them know before they found out, you know, somewhere else. And so they're like, oh, maybe we should partner. So I talked to them about partnering. And they said, like, we'll give you all the interviews you want. We'll help you promote it. We'll have you on Watch What Happens Live. This was before the first BravoCon. So they were like, you know, we can do a big thing at BravoCon, you know, whatever. Wow. But we want 10% of the book sales and complete editorial control.
Wow.
And my editor was like, oh, hell no, you crazy. So so in response, and, you know, as we were talking about this, Bravo asked for a list of people that I would like to interview, which I, you know, in good faith gave to them. They then interviewed not just everyone on the list, but every Real Housewife, every producer, everyone who's ever worked on the show, and said, do not talk to this guy. And
wow.
So, yeah, so they were not very helpful with it. And even as I was working on the book, like the New York Times asked me to do a story about how shows were dealing with reunion specials during COVID. And so I said, hey, I have this like weird situation with Bravo. Would you like just see if they want to cooperate? Because of course they want to talk about Housewives reunions. And so my editor from the Times called them, and they were like, oh, if Brian's writing the story, we're not participating. And
wow.
And then when
New York
Bravo
Times.
Came, then when
New York Times.
For the New York Times, exactly, because a little me. And so then when BravoCon came around, my editor at Vulture emailed Bravo and was like, hey, we want to have Brian cover it. and Bravo was like, Brian is not welcome here. He cannot cover it. And so I went to, I bought tickets to BravoCon and I went in disguise.
I know, so I saw your disguise on Instagram and I was cracking up that it actually does not look like you. It's weird. I guess, I don't want to compare you to Reza, but I guess I would recognize you most with that mustache and a kilt. You know,
that is 100% it. I mean, I have an iconic look like Lisa Rinna's hair. And yeah, so, you know, yeah. So when I shaved it, but then, of course, I ran into like every podcaster, every meme account person that I know. And they were all like, Brian. So it wasn't like so good of a disguise, but I mean, good enough.
It was going to kick you out.
Like, I wouldn't have noticed. They didn't come like kick you out though, right? Like big body.
No, I don't think that they saw me, you know, whatever. And I was trying to keep kind of a low profile. But then when they announced BravoCon last week or the week before, I got an email from the head of Bravo PR saying, at least you won't have to sneak in this year.
Are you back? Does that mean you're allowed, or is it more just like we have boosted security, so don't even bother?
Right, or like shade, or being like, I've read the book and I know what you did, or what, I don't know. So,
I just imagine Miranda Richardson. I just have like a vision of Miranda Richardson from The Crying Game, just like scanning the crowd and just like looking to assassinate you and just like push you out of the venue.
That's kind of what it felt like. Like I was always on the run from the law, you know, hiding from not only Bravo PR, but also Pepsi Rosé, which I wasn't going to put in my mouth at all.
Oh gosh, I forgot about that.
Well, it's actually super interesting. We got it yesterday, so I haven't read the whole thing. I'm probably about halfway through because I did just open it and just start devouring it. It's really good. And it's interesting reading all the inside stuff about Bravo because it explains a lot of their behavior, you know, like stuff that you're saying. We haven't really dealt with them that much at all, except to be like, can we have screeners or stuff like that? And they're so secretive and weird. Or then we'll find out from people like, no, we're not allowed to talk to you. We're like, they even know who we are? Like, how did that happen? Yeah. It's bizarre to me that there's such a secret world. But then reading this, you explain very well how secretive they are and how many notes they actually give for all of these shows, and like how you have to be a total insider to even work there, to even get a job there. But you have to have worked there before to get a job there. I mean, it's very like Queen of England type shit. You even said the Queen of England at one point. You even compared it to that. To her.
I compared Andy Cohen to the Queen of England.
Yeah. Wait, can you tell about that some more? So is it basically like you work your way up to being able to be on a Real Housewives show on the back end, on post-production, or just on the production?
So in all the job ads for Bravo shows, it all says previous Bravo experience required, but it's that catch 22, like you can't get Bravo experience until you've had Bravo experience. And so, you know, some people said like, you have to wait until they're really desperate, or you have like a bunch of people vouching for you to like get on the show. But then once people get on the shows, they stay on the shows because they say Bravo has the most work of anybody. It's the best paid. They make a ton of episodes. So it's like a big chunk of your year's work, because all the people that work on the shows are freelancers. And so they love working from Bravo. And then they go from like not just all the different Housewives shows, because most of the post-production for all the shows, even though made by different companies, is all in LA. And so they'll go from like, you know, Housewives to Southern Charm, and then to Below Deck and whatever. And, you know, Bravo is such the standard in the reality television arts and sciences that even other channels will be like Bravo experience preferred. Like they want you to have been through that sort of mill of Bravo. But the payoff for that steady work and the good pay and the good craft services at Evolution Media is that apparently Bravo gives the meanest notes. And
yes,
there's
I've
not
heard
just
that.
A ton of them, but they're like really snarky. Like the tone is not great. I talked to both people at Bravo and people at the production companies who said sometimes they would rewrite the notes before giving them to the people so they wouldn't get mad. And I talked to somebody who worked on an episode we would all know and has some iconic moments. And I can't divulge what it is because it would give this person's identity away. But he was like, even during this episode, they were giving like all these notes and saying like, did a monkey edit this? Like, just like tearing it apart. And I mean,
was the editor asleep on this? I was cracking up at that.
Like literally like shit like that. And you know, the irony is like, A, thank God for that because it makes Housewives what it is. But B, like it doesn't sound like a great kind of working environment, you mean?
Yeah, we once met someone who worked at a production company that deals with Bravo, and he said the amount of notes that come down the line from Bravo about every single episode and every single moment, they want to know like why there is that cutaway shot. Like every single piece of footage gets a note, which sounds totally exhausting, but I actually feel like we totally benefit from that because whenever you look at a show on E! Or some like TLC, you're just like, who is making this shit? And so like, it's probably hell for them, but I feel like the audience really benefits.
If Bravo was making 90 Day Fiancé, I would watch it. But I just, it's like, I find it to be unwatchable because it's like so long and so repetitive and needs to be tightened up. And I'm just like used to that Bravo-iness of it all. But I guess one of their other concerns is they say they get a lot of notes from most places, you know, that's very common. It's the tone and also that like different executives watch it at different times. And so like the lowest executive will say, do this. And then they do that. And then the second executive is, why did you do that? And then they're like, well, because the last person told us to. And so they're just like going back and forth and correcting all the mistakes that all the different executives have until you get, you know, to the top. And then it's like, that's what goes.
And then Sherry Levine comes in. I mean, that was written. I mean, after reading that, I really wanted just a whole book about Sherry Levine because she really sounds like a real groin gnasher. I don't even know what to say. I don't want to say ball buster because it's everybody. But man, she sounds scary as hell. It's like it goes through all of these people. They all do these notes. Then the next round of notes. Then finally they send it to her. And she's like, you're all done. You're all in my head.
You all suck. Know? Here's how it goes. Well, and that's what's really interesting is that, you know, Bravo, the Bravo we know today was started by Lauren Zelaznik, who is like a great TV executive. And she's now like a consultant. And Andy Cohen worked for her. And then there's this woman, Frances Barrick, who's been at Bravo since like the 90s before it was like anything. And she's like slowly, steadily worked her way up to the head of all of NBC Universal's Lifetime channels. And it's like, you hear about Lauren Zelaznik, you hear about Andy, you hear about Sherry Levine. And that Frances Barrick has just been like the quiet assassin the whole time, just like working her way up the ladder to like queen of the realm. And so, I'd be fascinated to hear more about her. She's not doing profiles for the New York Times like Andy is. So
I remember one time being on JetBlue, and I don't know if JetBlue still has this, but they used to have like New York Times television, and it'd be like a 5-minute panel of people talking about who knows what. And the flight that I was on was a 5-minute panel with, I think, Lauren, what's her name? Last name again?
Zelaznik.
And she was talking about at that time that Bravo used Queer Eye as like their philosophy for programming, that it was like, you know, for each one of those Queer Eye guys, they had sort of like programs to match that. But I feel like Bravo's kind of gotten away from that a little bit, you know, like 100%.
Well, and I think it was like Housewives because you can see how they totally did that. It's like they had Top Chef and food, and they had fashion and Rachel Zoe Project and Project Runway and all that stuff. And then, you know, Housewives kind of snuck in and like slowly
took over.
It was like the J. Rodriguez.
It didn't really make sense.
It was like being Bobby Brown and Housewives. And but now it's like when you think about all the shows on Bravo, it's like Below Deck is Housewives on a Boat. Shaw's is Housewives with Persians.
Yes.
You know, Summer House is Housewives in a Summer House. So, I mean,
they do seem to try to make certain things pop. Like, it's like they had their Home by Bravo thing going on, and they still have Backyard Envy that they sort of like throw at us randomly every now and then. So sometimes I feel like they're trying to kind of go back into that space a little bit. But I mean, at this point, it's just like it's like Housewives 24/7. all time.
Totally.
All the time.
And I think that they've been trying, we've seen for, you know, years, like that Home by Bravo thing when they did original programming. Mm-hmm. You know, I think they're trying to diversify, but other than Below Deck, they haven't had like a new big hit in a while.
Well, yeah, I remember it was those 2 years. It was like two solid years. They would green light like hundreds of pilots. I mean, it was so many pilots, and they would like just the PTA throw shit at the wall. And when Below Deck actually was the one to hit, I was so shocked. I was like, who wants to watch Maids on a Damn Boat? Who wants to watch this? And it, and we love it now, of course. But at the time, it's like so shocking to see what sticks. And then they did the home thing. And this year, it looks like they're going to do some kind of a dating, I guess, like a bachelor type. That's what I'm
hearing. They're going for love.
They're
going
to start doing like love and dating. And that's their new thing to try and break out, which, I mean, okay.
I mean, but it's good luck. Haven't they tried that before and it did not go well?
Yeah, relationship. And
Before that, even that Courtney Does Dallas or whatever that was.
Or actually, Bravo was home to the like the first gay, like sort of gay dating show, right? What was the name of that one?
Boy Meets Boy.
Boy Meets Boy.
I talk about it in the book because it was produced by Evolution Media that now makes Orange County, Beverly Hills, Vanderpump Rules, Botched, like all these Housewives shows.
Yeah, it's pretty cool reading about all those different production companies and which ones are the most hands-on and which ones are the most organic. Like you talk about Evolution kind of shockingly being the most organic. Although if you look shockingly, just because you would think something like Beverly Hills seems like it would be the most produced, at least to me.
Yeah.
But then reading your take or what you found out, that it's actually not. It's one of the most organic.
Yeah. Well, and I think that accounts for why Beverly Hills sometimes gets stuck in its own rut for like seasons on end. And I think that the Truly Original, which makes Atlanta and Potomac, is a lot more hands-on, like in the scene. And they'll kind of like, if they're at a dinner party, they'll like take Cynthia out and be like, you know, why aren't you asking her more questions? Why aren't you talking about this, whatever, and try to make the scene, you know, pop a little bit more. And that doesn't happen in Beverly Hills. And I think that accounts for why, you know, they sometimes just go on and on and on about the same stuff or really don't want to get like down into the dirt like some of the other housewives are willing to.
Do you think it's the producers, or do you think some of it is the fact that in Beverly Hills, these are various women who are still trying, I'm not saying that in a pejorative way or like to be like shady, but they're still trying to have a career outside of the show, like soap operas or music. And so they're protecting their image.
I think it's definitely some of each. I think that, you know, the producers could possibly push them harder, but I think you're right. They're obviously the most image conscious of the women. And I think, and I think that because all of the women are like that, they allow each other to behave like that. Like if you put Kenya Moore in that mix, Kenya Moore is going to bring up your shit and like call you on it. And, you know, but none of the women on Beverly Hills will. But I'm hoping that a Crystal Minkoff is going to come in there and be like, guys, let's talk about this shit, because otherwise it's getting
seems like it. Yeah, it seems like it. I think she was a really good addition. She's going to be a tinderbox on that show. It was interesting how you were talking about what shows are written. You know, the whole question of, is this written? Because people say, oh, these are just storylines. Yeah. Everything's written. And I really found that interesting how you were saying that it's not technically written, like they'll plan things, but if anyone's really guilty of writing it, it's the actual women themselves on the shows, which I guess we kind of knew, but it's fascinating because I did think it was more structured than that.
Well, and I think that fans often want to see all these invisible puppet strings, and it's like, oh, Bravo made the Tres Amigas be friends again because that's going to ruin the show. Or, you know, Andy says that they should do this or, you know, whatever. But really, I think that the women have internalized that sort of production mentality almost. And the calls are coming from inside the house. And it's like they all want to stay on the show. They all want to get another season. And so they're doing what they think they need to do in order for that to happen. And I think a lot of times that's good, but a lot of times when you see someone like Lisa Vanderpump who thinks she knows how to produce a show, but then is doing it badly, and then the women turn on her, you know, it becomes kind of an issue.
Yeah, I wonder what producers can do. I mean, I don't know if you address this in the book at all, but, you know, something that seems to be coming up more and more is this thing where the cast will decide that they're not going to shoot with someone, like they're going to ice them out, or someone right. will, someone will sort of draw that line in the sand, which I hate when that happens, because to me, it's that's not the spirit of the show. And you're also, it's like they're taking the production into their own hands, and they're actually supposed, they're the talent, and they're not the storytellers in that way. And it feels like that's happening more and more, or maybe I'm just like responding to it more and more. Was that something that you encountered when talking to some of these production companies and how they deal with it?
So I talked to some producers, and they said that in the past, like, you know, every episode they have to have a tentpole event, which is like something that all the women are going to go to, whether it's a dinner, a party, a trip to an apple orchard so Sonia can pee in the wild, you know, like whatever it might be. And that they would require all the women to be there, and they were like contractually obligated to go. But now Bravo is pushing them more to be like, well, if she wouldn't naturally be invited, then she doesn't have to be invited, which I get, because it's like, yeah, if you hate this person, why are you going to have her over your house? But then also it creates this thing where the women can just decide like who's on the show and who's not. And but I think this has been happening since the show started. And I talked to somebody who worked on the early seasons of Real Housewives of New York. And I think what we missed was that Bethany was trying to ice out Kelly Ben Simone. And that's what the I'm up here, you're down here was about. It wasn't about, you know, we all interpret it as Kelly thinks she's better than Bethany, but it was really because Bethany was trying to get them all to not film with Kelly, and Kelly was frustrated with that, and that's how she kind of voiced her frustration about it. And so I think that that's definitely been something that's happening. I think we're now just savvier to it and seeing it kind of happen more and more. But yeah, I also agree with you. It's like, you bitches need to sit down with Monique and talk about this, because that's your job. And you can't just be all like, Monique's not invited to anything, because then it's like, well, who cares?
Right.
Yeah.
So there's been kind of a shifting of the shows just because people have been on there for a decade. So it's starting.
Yeah.
We had like a huge slaughter last year where, you know, a record amount of housewives were fired or quit or whatever. And now we're seeing shows like Atlanta, which was always leading by far in the ratings, slipping quite a bit. And their seasons have been boring. I mean, they've been slow compared, because that's the best one. I mean, that's the most hilarious one, I think. And so to see that fall, do you think that that's because of Carlos King and the show? Like, how much does that have to do with the showrunners when he had to leave after the whole Phaedra thing and the new showrunners came in? Do you think it was a change of style where they weren't intervening as much and like maybe, you know, pushing them to get in these arguments? Like, how much do you think the showrunners are at fault for that, and how, or production in general, and how much do you think it's just we need refreshes of Housewives?
I think we need some refreshes of Housewives. I have been blaming some of the recent stuff on COVID. Because it feels like Atlanta only had like 5 women, and they just introduced Drew, and there were those, like, you know, Toya and Fallon and whatever kicking around the edges. But I feel like they're averse to introducing a lot of new women other than the women of color that they added to some of the shows, which they need to do anyway. And so I just think that some of that is them wanting to keep things the same because of COVID. Like, I feel like we wouldn't have had the same exact cast of New Jersey 3 seasons in a row if they weren't worried about finding and replacing women while production's kind of crazy.
New Jersey, sorry. No, you finish your point. I do have something I want to say about New Jersey, though, after this.
But I do think that, you know, the funny thing is that there are different production companies that do things different ways, but everybody who works for those production company are freelancers. So it's like, you could be a showrunner on Atlanta for one production company, and then you could be a showrunner on Dallas for a different production company, and they're going to tell you to do things a different way. But then Bravo is the one who's really coaching and turning these things all into Housewives and making them all look the same. So I think if anything that has to do with, you know, things getting boring, whatever, it's probably on Bravo, because Bravo is also the one in charge essentially of the final decisions of casting. And I think that more than anything has to do with the direction of how the shows are going.
It's so interesting, though, that if it's, you know, I totally get that. I mean, Bravo is the one sending all these notes and is viewing everything with all these eyes and sort of like forcing their vision. But it's sort of it's always surprising to me how they could have one show just be firing on all cylinders one season. And then you could have a legacy show like Atlanta be kind of dull for the past three seasons, if you ask me. And I think, I personally think there's some of it has to do with cast members really not giving themselves over to the show and to the experience. Because yes. What I was going to say about New Jersey is I agree that with COVID, I think it has made it hard on production. It's probably made it hard to create narrative on their end. But also, New Jersey had a great season, and they were in COVID. I mean, it was New Jersey too, so you know there was clearly right. some flaunting.
They do throw more cheese in general, so yeah. You know we got to give them that.
They were sort of like all in. I feel like with Jersey, they are all in, and they just. I don't feel like they're really ever trying to protect too much of an image. Sometimes Melissa Gorga a little bit, whereas I feel like. With Atlanta in this recent season, one thing that happened, it was such a small thing, but to me it really represented so much, was that they went on that awful New Orleans trip and Portia yep. left in the middle of the night. And I thought that to me, like you should just be there. Like you should be there even if you're having a miserable time. And that to me speaks to maybe why Atlanta is not like as strong as it used to be.
Well, and they all seemed like they didn't want to be. Well, it's because you had NeNe Leakes being like, I'm bigger than the show. I'm better than the show. I don't want to be here and being miserable. And then you had Portia be like showing up 3 hours late when she did show up, like not wanting to be there. And I think that a lot of these women do get kind of complacent. And I think that it was pretty big for Bravo to fire Vicky for NeNe to leave, yes. air quotes, you know, and to see some of those like bigger people be held accountable, because I think that someone like Portia or Kenya, who also didn't seem to have her heart in it this season, needs that shot across the bow that like, girl, if you don't step it up, you're out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I think the firings are really, really good to show the talent that they're not bigger than the show.
Yeah. And I think that's what everybody needs to realize, is that like none of you is bigger than the Enterprise. And right. and once it gets to this is my show, then it's like, sorry, you got to go.
It's time for a commercial. It's time for a Crappens commercial.
Yeah, dealing with all those egos. Another interesting point you made in it was that Bravo isn't trying to bring anybody down. Like a lot of you were talking about the bitch edit or the villain edit, and how the audience just assumes, oh, they're getting the bitch edit this season. It's their time to go down. And you're saying, no, they actually get notes. Like, don't make them look that bad. I mean, like, don't make them look bad. We want people to actually like them. And you were talking about people being friends with producers, because over the years you just get. You get intertwined, you know? So Kyle is best friends with one of the producers, and are they maybe going too easy on Kyle because of that? And it's just after so long, everything just gets so entwined, but that Bravo's actually they're actually doing them a favor by not giving them a bitch edit.
If anything, they're making them look like better or nicer because it's so different from so many other reality shows where like on The Bachelor or like Survivor, they can just like totally dick these people over, like do whatever they want to them, give them these crazy edits, because it's like you're on once and then you're gone forever. But like if you're going to be on season after season, like they need the women to trust them and keep them on their side. And so if they're making them look bad all the time or doing underhanded stuff, then you're going to lose the show. So I think it's with Housewives, it's a much more delicate balance. Yeah.
You know, one thing I've noticed popping up also on recent seasons, you know, over the past few years, the fourth wall has been coming down quite a bit, which has been really cool. But one argument that I feel like is popping up more and more, and probably was always there, but it wasn't maybe so in our faces, is sometimes I get the sense from Bravo cast members that they get into fights because one person feels like they are sharing so much of their life and another person isn't. And my question is, how much, like, do you think someone on Bravo is obligated to be an open book, or do you think they're allowed to share certain things and keep other things for themselves?
I used to think like, oh, you have to tell like everything to the camera, you know, but I do think that there is a certain level of like, if you want to keep this thing private, like, you can keep this thing private. And I felt a little bit like that with Denise and Brandy Glanville, because, like, even though Brandy used to be on the show, it's like Denise had an affair with her, and, like, whose business is it of ours? Like, if she had slept with Lisa Rinna, then it's like all of our business. But, and then it's like, so them, like, bringing in this old cast member to talk about how she had an affair with Denise, and then all the women kind of harping on it, it's like, you know, why do we care so much? I mean, I felt like Denise was already sharing enough about her life and her kids and Charlie Sheen and whatever, that then you kind of got into that Brandy Glanville stuff. So I do think that there are some things that aren't necessarily a part of the show that are personal, that the women should be able to keep private. But that said, I don't talk about this in the book, but I've been talking about this in my recaps lately. And I have what I call the unifying theory of late stage housewifery, which is that all fights on the show are about the show. Yes. And so it's like, yeah, Dorinda's mad at Tinsley because Tinsley doesn't really live in New York and won't talk about her relationship. Dorinda's mad about it at Ramona because she made her go to New Jersey so she could get a free party, you know? Yes. And it's like, we even saw in last night's Real Housewives of New York, like, Leah's bringing up this shit about Heather that she had, like, no involvement in, and but she thinks she has some stake in the game. And it's like, so all these fights aren't like interpersonal fights between friends. They're like workplace arguments among coworkers.
Yes.
And and I think that when it gets to that point, and Bravo will acknowledge it so far, but not entirely, that there's a weird gulf that we see that I don't find too enjoyable.
But I think the audience is pretty savvy. I think the audience is also like, especially with Dorinda and Tinsley, the audience clearly knew what that was about.
Absolutely, yes.
Well, kind of, but then that was still a huge revelation at the reunion when we got, you know, the whole loan. You asked him to borrow money. You asked your boyfriend, asked my boyfriend for money. And that was what was making Dorinda so crazy.
Like, that's
she
true
felt
too.
So she felt so stupid over that whole thing that she was losing her fucking mind. And that was a huge revelation. I love when that stuff happens, because I'm always shocked that I can still be shocked at these shows. I mean, we talk about them every single day. And when you can get me like,
exactly, yes. And it's almost like, I feel like, you know, I think Bravo is getting further and further with that fourth wall stuff, but there's also a point where they're really worried. And and it's so funny to me that they will let the women talk as much shit as they want about each other, but as soon as you start, like, mentioning production or how the shows get made or Bravo, they get really dicey.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Well, and I think that
they becomes the comeback, right, with Lisa Kudrow.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And you know, I do think it's interesting that even if they are coworkers, like Luann and Ramona have been together for 13 seasons at this point. Like, even if it's a coworker relationship, it's a real relationship with the dynamic. But I think that when it's just people who are coworkers, like Kenya and Portia and Cynthia and Candy, and it's like, we don't really want to hang out with us, but the show is making us, that's when things get a little stale. Like, I think there does need to be some sort of affection or camaraderie there. Like you see with, like, Lisa Rinna and Erika Jayne, who met on the show, but now seem to have a real affinity for each other.
Well, yeah, I would call that a real alliance with those two.
Because
those two, that is like classic Housewives, where Lisa Rinna was really just being a dick to Erica the whole first year that they were together, right? Well, at least most of that year. She was like slut-shaming her and doing all that stuff. Like the C word, where, you know, fast forward to this year, she's like, I'm a C word! You know, like really embracing Erica, or like down to copying Erica with the wigs and the this and the that. And it really, those two are definitely a classic Housewives alliance where they're just like, listen, bitch, all right, we're friends now. You don't fuck with me and I'll fuck with you, all right?
But I do think, Brian, you're so right about, you know, some of these people, they've actually created real friendships, because I was just watching Real Housewives of New York, And I was watching the scene in the limo where Luann and Sonia are talking, and Sonia is saying, you know, that Tom was her man first, and was like, oh, well, he was your fuck first, but he married me. And I was just like laughing because this conversation they were having wasn't just like a reality show scene. Like, these are two people who've known each other and have a very tangled past. Yes. And to me, that's like great TV. Like, I actually love watching that. And I feel like, especially now with New York, now that they've been sort of closer together at Ramona's house, like the niceties of the first two episodes have given way to now like the real, you know, underlying issues are coming out. And I love that because that feels very real to me. And to me, that's good TV.
No, absolutely. And then Ebony gets in and is like, oh, I think Luann's being too hard on Sonia. And I was like, well, not really, because Sonia has been bringing this shit up for like 5 years now. And like, you know, Tom like married her, cheated on her, divorced her, humiliated her. She got arrested. Like, what happened with Tom and Luann is way bigger than what happened with Sonia and Tom. But Sonia, I mean, is still harping on this 6-year marriage that she was in 12 years ago and like can't give this shit up. So of course, Luann's like frustrated and annoyed. It's like, you know, what's the statute of limitations on this same fucking argument?
Zero. No stat. It'll go on forever. Forever.
Yeah, so absolutely.
On a personal level, you know, you became close with Erica Jane. You ghostwrote her book. How much has that affected what you do? I mean, do you worry about being, you know, slanted towards her? Or do you think that it's natural that you would be slanted? I'm not saying you are or you're not. I'm just asking because that's such a line to walk, you know, when you become actual friends with people and you're commenting about them. How's that been going?
Absolutely. And I think it's like, as soon as I wrote the book and I told Vulture I was going to do it, and I was like, can I still write the recaps? They're like, yeah, as long as you tell people. And ever since then, it's like, you know how Housewives fans are, like, you give them a reason, they're just harp on it forever. And so especially this year, like, I started my recap being with like, yes, I know Erica, I worked on her book, I still talk to her, you know, but let's, you know, kind of wait and see what the season says. And you know, and we can judge it from there. And I think that if Erica, I know that if Erica was acting like an asshole on television and I didn't say like, you're acting like an asshole, she'd be mad at me. So I think I can be fairly, you know, centered about it. But also like the fans this year were in the comments being like, he should recuse himself. You have no journalistic integrity. And I'm like, girl, it's fucking reality television recaps. Like, this is not like, you know, investigative journalism, like who cares? And as one of the commenters pointed out, this is the first year I recap New Jersey. And I started off the first recap with like, I'm going to be square with you. I fucking loathe Teresa Giudice. And someone pointed out like, you know, oh, you're yelling at Brian for being, you know, maybe biased towards Erica Jane, but you didn't yell at him for being biased against Teresa. Ooh. So like, you know, I don't see the difference to fans. Like, yeah, if I love somebody or hate somebody, and, you know, I think that, yeah, obviously I know Erica. And so I'm going to see her a little bit differently on television than a lot of people would, but I try to account for that. But also one of the things I find fascinating about Housewives and Housewives fans is that no matter who the woman is, there are people that love her and there are people that hate her. Mm. And, you know, and so it's not, so if you don't like Erica, I think you can still read my recaps and see why I do. Or if you like Teresa, you can see like, oh, okay, I get your point. And if you're going to have like a valid argument with me and say like, okay, here are the reasons why I like Teresa and here's why I think she's good, like, I'm willing to listen to you, but just be like, you shouldn't be able to talk about this, I think is stupid. So sorry, I just
recuse yourself.
Speaking of Erica, so this is now not to put you in a weird Erica position, although I don't really think it will. But one of my ongoing theories that I've been bitching and moaning about more and more has been about the rise of glam on The Real Housewives, which to me actually seemed to really arrive in full force with Erica. She had the glam squad, and now it's like, now Rinna has one, and Dorit has one, and Jen Shah has the Shah squad, and now we even saw it a little bit on New York this week, and I feel like we have these sort of endless scenes of glam, and then women sort of doing these fashion shows, and it feels like filler content, and it's becoming, I personally think it's very uninteresting, and I think it's actually something that's starting to plague these shows a bit. Where do you fall on that? Am I just a sour person?
No, I totally agree with you. And Erica Jane definitely set it off, especially like taking Glam on vacation, whatever. And for Beverly Hills, I don't mind it so much because I think that's the point of Beverly Hills. It's supposed to be rich and opulent and, you know, like these women going to a red carpet, which they would be getting glam for. So when they get glam and show up at Dorit's house, I'm kind of like, okay, you have interesting outfits on. Like, I don't mind it. But the sort of diaspora of glam, I agree with you. Like, Ebony and Leah need glam in Ramona's basement during a pandemic. Yeah. Like, girl, come on.
No.
Or like Tinsley needs to take somebody. Or like Jen Shaw gets in full glam in this dress and then goes to a mini mall in Salt Lake City. Like, what is even the point? Like, it just seems stupid. Yeah. So I wish that, you know, maybe we could confine it to Beverly Hills. But I also liked when they went on that vacation to France and they were like, no one's bringing glam, no glam for anybody. And I think that maybe we might want to see more of that. But on the shows like New York, where Sonia, Ramona, Luann have been on for so long and never needed or used glam, I don't think they're ever going to get it or want to pay for it because we've been doing this for so long. Why do we need it now? And so I think it's mostly the new people coming in feel like there's a level of expectation of them.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's another kind of like money flex, like, oh, look at me, I brought the glam squad, I'm rich. But yeah, now also we have all this financial stuff with Erica and Tom going on. And I think that her bringing her glam might not look the same way that it used to.
Oh, yeah. No, and that guy, Ronald Richards, that lawyer who's like really coming for Erica hard all the time on Twitter, like he's really on her. And he's like, didn't they hire him to like take notes on the show? And he's like literally got a ledger that he's writing down everything, like the big diamond necklace. They're like, let's bring that out of storage, bitch. He's like, writing it down. Okay, big diamond necklace. Like everything she wears, those gold boots, they moved into another closet. He's writing every little piece of that down.
Right. Looking up the manufacturer's suggested retail price on the fucking Gucci booties. Like, adding it up. We're liquidating.
I think Bravo is going to be really leaning into Erica's glam this season, actually, to sort of like a before and after kind of thing. So I fully expect lots and lots of that glam. But I guess for me, I get frustrated because those are scenes where we could be like learning a little bit more about someone. You know, with Erica, one of my ongoing issues with Erica is that we don't really know anything that goes on in her life. We just see her in her closet with Mikey and her assistants. And I always get frustrated because I feel like if you have a cast member who's not sharing such huge swaths of their life, then I feel like it has an effect of that other people feel like, okay, well, then I don't have to share something. It's just my theory. But when I look at New York, one of the reasons why I think that New York is so good, and Potomac too, is that they kind of are just like, they just put it all out there and they don't really hide away from anything. Also, to be fair, it kind of feels like the women on New York are mostly past their prime, you know, in like outside of Roni. And so they don't really have anything to lose, right? You know, Luann has a cabaret career. But other than that, you know, they're kind of, their kids are out of the house more or less. They've had their careers, they've had their marriages. Now they're just having fun, you know, and they just have nothing to hold back. Right.
Well, and I think we also see, you were talking about Lisa Rinna being like, oh, I can't say the C word. And now she's calling herself a cunt. Like, I think everybody's like walls go down a bit. Like, if you think of the first season of Roni, the reunion, Ramona got up and walked off set because they were talking about Alex McCord's nude photos. We have now seen Ramona shit on the floor on multiple occasions. And like, you know, and she still gets like prudish about Leah and stuff, but also like, how far have you come that no longer, or it's like we saw Luann introduce herself to the driver as Luann rather than Mrs. De Lesseps. And so
that's huge.
Oh my God. Like, Ramona even knew the name of the help this week. All of really the good people about that. There. She knew everyone's name and said it over and over again to prove that she'd learned a lesson. I mean, you, when you get to a point where Ramona is learning lessons, like, do we just quit everything now? Like, it just needs to all stop production. It's over.
I keep joking that Bravo should have a show called Doing the Work, and we get like Stassi and, you know, Jax and like Chris Harrison, like all these people who have been openly racist, and then like they have to learn how to not be racist on the show.
Yeah, my show idea is called Canceled. We just get all the canceled people, put them in a house, get them there. Let's do it.
What could go wrong? Thomas Ravenel. Let's put them all in there. What could possibly
let's uncancel
go wrong,
them.
Guys?
Let's rehabilitate all of these good reality stars that we've lost.
Yeah. It's a shame. It's a shame sometimes when you have a really good reality star and you're like, oh, but you're racist. That's too bad.
Yeah. sorry, Stassi.
But before we wrap up, I do want to also mention that you have an absolutely amazing list on Vulture right now of the top 100 outrageous housewife moments. And I read through all of them yesterday. I read through them. I like processed. I like reminisced. There was one though that actually motivated me into action. You talked about, I forget what's because I
you're
tweeted
changing
about it.
Lives, sir.
No, I tweeted about it and you responded. You on one of the, I forget what number it was, but about Bethany and Jill and how you said, you know, when they had that final conversation and Bethany was like devastated on the sidewalk in her red. So I decided to go and look at the clip that you linked to on that article. And I looked at this 5-minute clip and it was, first of all, it was amazing, amazing clip. And I have to say, I do think that looking at this Jill Zarin and Bethany fight with the lens of history, I mean, this is 11 years ago. I have to say my opinion has totally changed. And I actually talked about this recently on the show, but watching that clip, I mean, Jill Zarin was an asshole for sure.
Yes.
But at that time we were like, oh, Jill is such an asshole and Bethany is the voice of the people. And now seeing everything that Jill Zarin says about Bethany and seeing really, we've seen a little bit more of Bethany's true colors. I have to say, I'm really on Jill Zarin's side with it. I mean, this is a woman who like nearly lost her husband, who later then RIP Bobby. She's going through the pain and the torture of and the uncertainty of cancer, and you can see her anguish as she's telling this to Bethany, and Bethany's like, well, you know what, like I wrote you an email, you didn't write me back, you didn't write me back, like, I don't know, right. I have to say thank you for that list, Brian.
Jill's like, well, why didn't you call? And at the time we were like, oh, Jill, you're being so unreasonable, and now I'm like, oh no, you're totally right. And just from watching Bethany all these years, I assume you watched Big Shot with Bethany,
yes,
where she's like kind of a dick to these people on the show.
She's a monster, that lady.
And knowing all I know about Bethany and how she was like really into producing the show, how she manipulated the press, like all of that stuff that was going on behind the scenes. I watched it. When I wrote about it, because I remember when I initially watched it being on Bethany's side. So I think I wrote it like, oh, poor Bethany. But now I'm like, you know what? You're right. Like, knowing what I know about Bethany and knowing what I know about Jill. I was on Jill's side again.
I think the problem with Jill with that was it's just how she handled it. I mean, if she'd gotten together with her and had that fight, but she was trying to do the whole, she's not coming to anything. That's it. You know, she tried to do the cutout in that season with Bethany, which you're going up against Bethany for that? Like, that's just a stupid move. I mean, just as someone who enjoys the game of Housewives, you watch that, like, you are playing this completely wrong and I cannot root for you. I thought it was super interesting in your book, you were talking to Darren Betancourt, who was her assistant, and then Tinsley's. I didn't know he was Tinsley's as well, but boy, does that guy have trouble with recording things when he's not supposed to, doesn't he? So what was that
he claims he didn't record that we talk about that after the boat ride from hell. I talk about in the book, there was a call amongst all the women, the producers, the production company, Andy, you know, Bravo, everybody, because the women were really aggrieved and were threatening to sue and were looking for money and all this stuff. And supposedly there is a recording of this phone call, and supposedly, according to people I know who have heard the recording, Andy is sort of yelling at the women and calling them names on the recording. And Bravo assumes that it was Darren who was Tinsley's like manager and publicist at the time. He claims it was not. So we'll see who exactly recorded it. But then I also talked to other people who were on the call, and they don't remember anything noteworthy about the call. But I don't know if that means that Andy wasn't yelling, or Andy actually yells so much that they didn't notice that right, Andy was normal. Yelling.
That's right.
Yeah, it's could just be another that. Call, you know?
Right. It's just like, oh, here's Bravo being mad at us again. But I guess they did get like free spa vouchers out of having been on the boat.
That's just terrible. Some of the stuff, I'm just shocked at how cheap Bravo is. First, that whole boat ride thing.
Cheap.
You know, they were saying it's so dangerous. The boat could capsize. Like, it's scary. It's scary weather. And Bravo's like, no, we have to do it. It's good TV. I mean, that right there is just fucking horrible. Not shocking. And I guess we kind of knew that, but just terrible. And then when everyone gets mad to give them spa vouchers, and you know it was to like Leah's little Russian spa downtown too. It wasn't even.
I used to go to homosexual sex parties in that Russian spa.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I'm
back
sure.
in the day. Ooh, girl, I had some times. I had some times.
That's, oh, well, the old
good
days.
Good thing it was no secret recording then, you know? And you know what? By the way, another secret recording I would like to see. I would like to know what happened on that fateful trip when the cast of New Jersey went to the Dominican Republic and got into a yes. brawl at the hotel because it was the Manzos and it was Teresa and Joe and the Manzos against some locals, right?
Yeah.
And there was a whole lawsuit. And it somehow went away, and we never saw it on Bravo. It was during the cast trip. And I would like to see that get unearthed. I think it's time, especially now that Caroline's getting dragged through the mud, deservedly so.
I am ready for that as well. I talked to Greg Bennett, who was, you know, friends with the Manzos for the book, and we talked about that trip, but I can't remember if anything about the brawl came up because this interview was now quite some time ago.
I think the Gorgas in general is a treasure trove of shit that they don't go into. You bring up in the book how Melissa's got fake storylines all the time or whatever, which is so true. Like the missing sister from the psychic and the baby.
Oh, yeah.
But then meanwhile, you know, stuff has brought up like in the past couple of weeks about them. Like the, you know, you lost your parents' house to make Melissa look rich enough to be on the Housewives, and all the shady Gorga. There's so much shady Gorga stuff that they don't get into at all, which is weird because that's one of the ones you're like, why are you protecting Melissa of all people? You know, I get Kyle Richards a little or people like that, but Melissa?
Well, and whenever someone shows up on The Housewives and their husband's job is entrepreneur, it's like red flag city.
Yes.
It's like, who is an entrepreneur? Russell Armstrong, Joe Giudice, Jen Shaw, like entrepreneurs, bitch. PK, like.
Uh-huh.
Oh, PK. Yep. Yeah, that's going to be another one. I can't wait for that downfall. That's going to be a great, great storyline. I've been waiting for that for years. But tell everybody, because I'm going to mess it up. I stutter. I'm going to fuck everything up. But tell everybody where to find The Housewives, the real story behind The Real Housewives by Brian Moylan.
It's out now. You can find it everywhere. Books are sold, Barnes & Noble, Target, all that. You can buy it online at thehousewivesbook.com. And there's links there to like independent booksellers if that's what you enjoy. Vulture and I started a couple weeks ago the Housewives Institute Bulletin, which is a twice a month newsletter with Housewives news, recap, highlights, original stories that I'm writing, fun, stupid gifts and things like that. And you can sign up for that. It comes out every other Friday. And you can sign up for that at vulture.com/housewives.
Awesome. That's well, congratulations cool. and really great work. This is how far I am. I'm only about halfway through. So all of that dirt I was asking about, it was a lot. It was a lot. And I'm only
like,
halfway
Ronnie,
through.
Really, Ronnie had, I was
mean,
like,
you
wow,
haven't even gotten to your chapter yet.
I didn't know we were in this.
I haven't started it yet.
This
I'm
is
excited.
Also,
really
the cover
good. Is beautiful.
Yeah, the cover is great. And yeah, and so there's a whole chapter about, you know, people like us who do Housewives for a living and the crazy fan communities and Facebook groups and all that, and how like everything that is about Housewives eventually turns into Housewives, where it's just like people yelling at each other and the receipts and, you know, craziness.
By the way, only just now noticed this back cover. This back cover is hilarious. I'm not even going to ruin it for people. When you get the book, look at this back cover. Praise for the Housewives from themselves. From themselves.
That was my idea. That was my idea. There's also a humdinger of a dedication in the very front. So.
Oh, wow. I can't wait to dive into this. And thank you so much for coming on. We love chatting with you. I feel like the last time we had a nice big chat was the Ray episode of Roni. I feel like you came on for that and we just like got all in about Ray, which was so perfect. So,
and then I interviewed Ray for the book about like the fallout of being on Housewives. So, oh God.
Bitch, you bitch.
He has a kid on the way now.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, good for her. Good for her.
Good for her. Sure, that would be a wonderful, wonderful.
Totally well-behaved, well-mannered baby coming down the pipe.
What could go wrong? What could go wrong?
All right, Brian, thank you so much. After that episode, they invited him to go on Below Deck, but he said no.
I don't understand him. Why?
Like as a guest.
Oh, maybe because he had to pay or something. Because, you know, they don't let you on that shit for free. They're like, hey, would you like to come on our show? That'll be $50,000.
I know. I was like, bitch, you crazy.
Yeah. I think of the Bravo one-hit wonders, I think we have Alison Dubois at the top. Yeah. We have Ray, and we have Bolo. I think Bolo has achieved a place. And I don't know if there may be some others in there, but I don't know of any three who have reached the status that those three have in like the collective Bravo imagination.
One of the people I reached out to as many people as I could possibly find, and one of the people who I was really hoping to talk to me who declined was Dee Dee, Camille's former friend who was at the dinner party from hell. She's now like a makeup artist in Seattle and doesn't like to talk about her time on the Housewives, apparently.
Oh God, Dee Dee. I don't blame her. She got trampled on that show and she was just trying to, it's like she actually came on trying to be a good friend to somebody.
There's no room for goodness in this game, guys.
Especially to Camille, okay? Oh my God. All right. Well, great talking to you. Hopefully we'll get to talk again soon. Thanks for being here. Go buy this book, people.
Yeah. Bye. Thanks, Brian. Talk to you next time.
Brian.
Bye.
Watch What Crappens would like to thank its premium sponsors.
Ain't no thing like Allison King.
Ashley Savoni, she don't take no baloney.
Dana C, Dana Do. She's not just a Sheila, she's a Daniela. Itchels.
Let's run some errands with Emily Ahrens.
Aaron McNicholas, she don't miss no trickolas.
Hava Nagila Weber.
Jamie, she has no last namey.
Sip some scotch with Jessica Trotch.
Just saying, okay. She's a little bit loony. Junie, she's always supplying. It's Kelly Ryan.
Megan Berg, you can't have a burger without the Berg.
You don't touch the Nicky Morgan letters. The Bay Area Betches. Betches.
And our super premium sponsors.
Nancy, cease and desisto. Better than Tabbouleh, it's Annie and Julie.
Always the wiser, it's Allison Weisler.
Somebody get us 10 cc's of Betsy MD.
We're taking the gold with Brenda Silva.
Can't have a meal without the Emily Sides.
In the Hizzy with Jay Hizzy.
We will, Joanna Rockland, you.
Kristen the Piston Anderson.
Let's go on a bender with Lauren Fender.
The incredible edible Matthew sisters.
No one makes us feel well like Megan Cap Sewell.
She's cheese on a bagel. It's Megan Ragel.
Mina Coochie Coochie Coochie.
We're a fan of Michael Ann. Give him hell, Miss Noel. Shannon, out of a cannon, Anthony.
Let's get racy with Miss Stacy.
Let's take off with Tamla Plain.
She ain't no shrinking Violet Couture. We love you guys.